This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 255.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and we're still wiping the tears from the Friends reunion. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and I wasn't a huge Friends head, but I do like an excuse to cry. Today, we're going to talk about the origins of COVID, that one reporter who got fired for that one tweet, and burnout. Is it just a thing we say, or is it a real phenomenon? Today, I'm joined... Oh my God. Today, folks, today's panel. Oh, this is fantastic. I am joined... By a comedian whose work I love. You've heard her on this show before. You can see her handiwork on Showtime's Our Cartoon President because she fancy. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Cody Lindquist. Hey, Cody.
Hello.
And, guys, I've been trying to get this guy on their show for a minute, but he's so in demand. You've heard him on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Maybe you've even heard him with me on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's also a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning. He can do really fantastic cartwheels on demand. I've seen him do it. He's also the host of the podcast Mobituaries. He's the writer of books, and he's just done so many things. I really can't go through his Wikipedia page right now, so you just have to take my word for it. Folks, it's Mo Rocca. Hey, Mo.
Again, I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so happy that there's now an on-demand cartwheel channel.
Yeah, you
I can
just
also
go
do
to
a cartwheel,
1,000.
Guys. I can do a cartwheel too. Just
guys, Cody can don't feel left out.
I took
folks.
Gymnastics
Cody can
in
do...
elementary school.
Cody, your premium, your Showtime.
Thank you.
I know you don't need the cartwheel channel. You don't need the cartwheel channel. That's like for D-list people like me and Mo. All right, folks. Before we get into the show, I just want to remind everyone, and this I think is the last time I'm going to remind people that I have a show. It is called Nagin Farsad Presents An Evening of Comedy from Her Mouth Hole. It will be on June 8th. That is Tuesday, June 8th. That's next week on June 8th at Caveat in New York City. If you're anywhere near New York City, please come see the show. It's a vaccine passport show, which means you just got to show proof of your vaccination through your CDC card or through your Excelsior pass. Excelsior makes it seem so medieval times. You know what I mean? Like we're going to be in there chomping on turkey legs. But it is in fact just like a vaccine app. It's super easy to use. I've used it now many times. It's really exciting. There's things opening and things happening in New York City. So come see this show. I would love to see you there. They just increased the capacity to 60%. So there's a few more tickets, and I would love to see you guys there, and I hope we do. And now we are going to get into it with topic number one. Remember how early in the pandemic there were rumors that COVID could have come from a lab, and we largely dismissed it then, but now there's some more evidence that maybe that's true. To be clear, we still don't know definitely, but there is a chance that this was some Island of Dr. Moreau shit and that the Chinese were making crazier COVIDs and one baby COVID got out and turned into a monster COVID. Did you guys catch this news, and what do you think?
I just want to say I'm really proud of liberals because we allow science.
Wait, this is a first time in Fake the Nation history.
So proud.
That anyone is proud. Okay,
I
am. You proud of liberals?
Because, you know, we listen to the evidence, and if the evidence says that we were wrong, we change our minds. So maybe we were all like, oh, this is a Trump conspiracy theory, like, you know, all of it. But now, okay. If science says it happened, then I believe science. And whatever they come up with, whatever they decide to, like, whatever people tell us, the truth is, people tell us the truth is. I mean, that sounds terrible. Who are people? But I'm proud of us for leaning into the evidence-based science, changing our mind.
Oh, my God. Who are people? People People who need science are the luckiest people in the world.
I believe anything someone says. That's not what I meant. But you know what I'm saying.
I think more than once, Donald Trump said something in an inflammatory, outrageous way, and a lot of people, myself included, instantly said, no, that can't be true. But deep inside, there was a part of me that thought, wait a minute, what if it's true? What if there's some truth? And you know, we've all had that experience, I think, in our lives where there's that person who, you know, maybe he's at the end of the bar, right? And he's saying something like in the movie The Birds.
Or he's your
the
uncle.
Guy, like there was, okay. it could be my uncle. God, I wish I had an uncle who was in the movie The Birds because I love that movie. But, you know, the person saying the birds are coming to kill us and everyone says he's crazy. Like, birds are going to kill us all. It was a guy with an Irish accent in the movie.
Right.
And it turned out that he was right.
You know, Mo, I mean, I think the thing that you're really pointing to is the fact that a broken clock is right twice a day. You know what I mean? And so we had an unwell president who was right a couple times. And we do have to recognize that that happens super accidentally. Let me just tell you guys a couple of the deets on this situation. Those are abbreviations that I hope you'll follow.
I get it.
Okay, thank you. The Chinese have basically refused access to the labs where... So what happened is it turns out three of the people that were working in the lab where the virus was found were sick with COVID-like symptoms in November, right? So it was before any of the reported cases came out of China. A couple of other weird things. So the outbreak started more than 1,000 miles from the bat habitat where similar viruses have been discovered, but just a stone's throw from an important laboratory that was studying that coronavirus, right? That laboratory where three people were sick. The Chinese arrested whistleblower doctors during the first stages of the pandemic. So like we're also dealing with a government that isn't like the most delightful in terms of collabing.
Name a government that is, really, Nagin. I think that all the governments
I'm going to go ahead and say Denmark. Oh, is it Denmark?
If this originated in Denmark, we would have a full disclosure report that would tell us every detail.
Everyone would know shit. And we'd get free chocolate on top of it.
Oh, and there would be beautiful little wooden toys with bright colors that would help explain it to us. No, I mean, the Chinese government, I mean, it's kind of evil. I mean, it's, you know, you have to, I mean.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're going full action, like
I'm not
action
going
movie
full access.
Language.
I'm not going full access of evil, which sounds like another premium service. Evil access. Evil plus. Because everyone's putting a plus on the end of their streaming service. But no, I'm going to go really dark here for a moment. But as I do each morning, asking Alexa to play NPR headlines, they were describing China's new population program. And they were kind of doing sort of an obit on the one-child policy that China used to have. And apparently when families would violate that, they would burn families' homes down. I mean, it's kind of...
It was a different time, though. It was the 80s.
I know.
It was like before they discovered full capitalism. It was just like mini capitalism back then. And now it's just, you know.
So we can't trust them. Okay, we get it. You know,
I do think... We can't trust them because...
I think my... thing is going to be, it's going to be more difficult if we realize that it didn't come from a lab and it came from like eating animals or having exotic animals as a pet. Like we really do need to take a look at how we treat animals. Animal Farm is real. The animals are coming to kill us all. And
sure.
I think we really do need to take a hard look at how we consume, raise, and morally treat animals.
But you know, if they do,
which is a harder discussion to have than a lab accident.
I know. But if they do come to kill us, I hope that they don't. When they talk I hope their lips don't move, because while I love the movie Babe, that aspect of it is really creepy. When
So the murderous part, would you be okay with? It's like the lip, but don't talk. Like, murder us, but don't talk to us.
Here's the thing, and I'm really not just trying to plug one of my projects, but when I worked on the Peabody Award-winning children's program Wishbone on PBS, Wishbone, a delightful Jack Russell Terrier who in his dream life became the heroes of classic novels, he didn't move his lips when he talked. So he was charming, and he never creeped you out. But I just don't. Animals that are coming to kill us, just don't be super creepy.
I cannot help but think that this was an elaborate way for you to plug that one children's show.
It worked, and because I am a mother, and I am now going to show it to my children.
Now you're writing it down, and now your kids are obsessed with it already. I mean, you know, Mo, you really did it. Here's my question. There's a couple more deets about the Cheneys and how they may be evil, plus the new streaming service. Universities have been instructed not to publish any report that indicates the virus originated in China.
Oh,
that's weird, because at this point, we all know journalists have been harassed when they try to investigate caves in South China. And what's weird is that the Chinese are just unwilling to do any of the lab testing that would totally solve this mystery. Like, if they just tested those three people that in November had COVID-like symptoms and showed us the test and they were like, see, guys, it was just like a whatever. Someone ate a bad, you know, a bad muffin one day. It was that. And it wasn't this thing. Then they would have put it to bed. But it's weird that they're going through such lengths to not just put it to bed. You know what I mean? So now all we can do, because also they control the flow of information within their own country. And so maybe they're sort of like, who gives a fuck what's being said in other countries? Like I said, they're not delightful when it comes to international communication. Here's my question for you guys, though. Why is it important? Do you worry about the kind of testing that they do? So, like, part of the theory is that they were doing this testing in a lab that had BSL-2 security, which is a lower security than the BSL-4 lab security.
You gotta save money where you can. You gotta save money.
Well, you know, right. Like, the BSL-2 labs don't have the grand molding, but the BSL-4 labs definitely have that nicer touch. They were doing it at a lower security, like, lab where they with and the thing that they were doing was like fucking with these viruses to make them stronger, to be like, what would happen if we just made, if we add a little jalapeno and made them a little stronger, you know? So, and apparently that's a thing that happens, and some of this stuff was happening in this lab funded by American taxpayer dollars, right? Like, it's not even anything weird. It's like, this kind of testing happens. What do you think of this kind of testing, and did you know it went down?
Well, I mean, I love America's Test Kitchen. I mean, it's one of my favorite cooking shows. So I'm glad that the Chinese are adapting it for, you know, to promote science.
I guess, I mean, right, they're presumably testing these things to make them stronger so that they can make, like, vaccines for things that might happen naturally. Is that, like, the point? Or is it, like, a bioweapon type situation?
Right. I mean, the interesting thing is there's like these two scientist dudes that had a bet that, like, that there would be by 2020 or the end of 2020 or whatever, a pandemic that would started with bioterror or bioerror that would result in 1 million in casualties, which is a real sick fucking bet. But a bet was made between these famous science ethicists or whatever.
Well, we were due for one.
And they can't figure it out if it's bioerror, bioterror,
or a typo. Is that a typo or
so to settle their bet, they need to come up with why the coronavirus happened.
The Chinese basically have to. Yeah, we need to figure. I mean, because I think one thing is, you know, Cody, you mentioned this thing about animals. Let's, like, figure out what we're doing with animals just once and for all globally. I agree with that. And then let's also figure out, like, I get that these labs, I want someone to make the really great case for why making viruses stronger in a lab setting to see what could happen is useful. Like, what is that?
then maybe it's not useful. You know what I mean? Like, maybe we don't do that anymore. I don't know. I'm into having that debate.
Or maybe.
Mo?
Or maybe the next leader of China should be Daniel Hum from 11 Madison Park, because he is willing to make tough choices and turn one of the greatest restaurants in the world, which I did a piece on. This is not plugging that because it was a news piece.
Yeah,
there's no
okay.
money that I can get from it. But it's one of the world's greatest restaurants. He just said, after reflecting on the pandemic, this thing is going full vegan. They're going to have a little cream for your coffee. They will do that, but that's it. So
they have to. They have to face it, and we don't want to face it. We make a joke that AOC wants to take away your hamburgers, but you know, we do actually need to lessen our meat consumption. We need to stop giving all of these animals antibiotics. We need to stop factory farming. We need to stop like exotic animal farming, which is a cultural thing, and that's difficult. These are difficult conversations to have. So it would be way easier if we were like, it came from a lab. We won't do it again. We promise. Bye. But instead, we need to have these conversations about animals before they rise up with their mouths moving, Mo. And they talk to us before they murder us, which they will do.
Which is a nightmare. Which is the biggest part of the nightmare, not the murder, just to be clear. And also, I want to go ahead and for like the international community to have that fun conversation of like, guys, when we do a lab, what's the interior design and what kind of security precautions are we going to take?
Yeah, you Americans, know what I mean? And I assume the Chinese government, we're not very good at like investing in things. You know, we have a crumbling infrastructure. We're not going to be like, let's spend a little bit more money to heighten the security. We're sort of like, oh, let's cut corners. And if a global pandemic
happens.
It's
my parents, though, too. It's my parents that are the same thing.
Coupon clipping.
You know, they'll redo a bathroom and then they'll just be like, no, but let's get the cheap toilet, everything. And no one
will
tell.
If you're going to go through the hassle, get the better toilet. It's going to break.
Get a better toilet. Guys, let me know, folks, what you think of what's going on here. What is your biggest concern? What do you think should happen internationally? And in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to learn about our sponsors. And when we come back, who are great, by the way, love our sponsors. Did I mention? Let me take a moment to just say, love our sponsors. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about tweets. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 50 and use the code FakeTheNation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code FakeTheNation50 at factormeals.com/FakeTheNation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. So an Arizona-based junior staffer at the AP Wire was fired a few days after conservative groups targeted her for expressing pro-Palestinian sentiments on Twitter when she was in college and then arguably throughout the situation that's happening with Israel and Palestine. The AP said that she violated their social media policy but was totally vague. I mean, what do you guys think?
Here's
that's just like the very basic
pro tip,
story.
Pro tip,
Cody.
When you get your first job, just delete your entire Twitter account.
Right. All of it. Yeah.
Just delete it all. We should have some sort of thing that you it deletes every 2 years or deletes every year. Just delete it, delete it. Because there's something, once you get a job like that, there will be something in every single thing that you've ever said that will be controversial.
Or what you can do is every joke, really every thought you have that you commit to social media, you should put right after in parentheses an expiration date. That's I really think that for jokes, like to tell a joke, like it should just have an expiration date. And then if it's offensive after, before that expiration date, you're liable. You know.
That's true. That's true. We should not. Yeah. But the other thing I want to say about this, this was her first job out of college.
God,
so
literal.
I like people
she
like
had
the
only
things
been
she wrote
there.
In college. She's 23.
Cody,
so that was,
she had only been there for 3 weeks.
I know.
Like that's how new and fresh she was to this job. And it's an associate program. So like part of the idea is, hey, I'm going to make a bunch of mistakes because I'm a young idiot. Like, and then the AP Wire is going to help me grow wiser and stronger and become a better journalist. It's not like, and she was on, I don't even know what beat. She was not on the international news beat. She was on a like help other reporters like format documents beat. You know what I mean? She was like very clearly and oddly targeted.
It's really silly, too, that the right does this where, you know, the media tries so hard to be objective that they end up throwing people under the bus for things that don't make any sense just in the name of objectivity. You know, we're going to be super even Steven. And it's really frustrating. Like, you are allowed to have an opinion about things if you're a journalist. You know, obviously you don't want to have a journalistic or an opinion bent in something you're currently writing, but like, you're also allowed to have opinions about life, other things. She wasn't writing, you know, about the stuff that she was getting.
Right. She wasn't writing about the conflict.
Right, right.
Here's something she said. Oh, go ahead, Mo.
No, I was going to say, I think that's fair. Like, I'm a journalist and I should be careful on contentious issues that I might end up covering, but I can have opinions about other things. So on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, I demur, but I think both of you have really pretty hair.
Thank you very much. I know how to take
also,
a compliment.
Also, yeah, you've had some very strong opinions about talking animals, which isn't going to get you in trouble right now. But
yeah,
we don't know.
We can't
we don't
hire
know in
you
5 years if that's going to get you in so much fucking trouble.
I'm not on the anthropomorphism beach. That's somebody else.
Well, you never know in 10 years. I also feel very, very good about the fact that I'm terrible at Twitter now. I'm really bad at Twitter. I never really like came up with funny little hot takes. It's not my thing. And I'm feeling excellent about that. I feel really good about it.
Right, because it had no part in destroying your life.
Yes.
Let me read a little thing from her statement, which I thought was nice. And it kind of echoes what you were saying, Cody. She wrote, "Objectivity feels fickle when the basic term we use to report news implicitly stake a claim using Israel but never Palestine, or war but not siege and occupation, are political choices, yet media make those exact choices all the time without being flagged as bias." And I think that's exactly right. We make a lot of political, august institutions like the AP Wire make a lot of those political choices all day in the way they edit pieces, but they're not considered biased when in fact, you know, look at it from another lens and it's totally biased. Also, I want to say, like, so many people are activists in college. Like, if you can't be an activist and then a journalist in college and then a journalist later in life, like, there's no hope for the world, because it seems like that just happens a lot. And she also wrote, "What future does it promise to aspiring reporters that an institution like the Associated Press would sacrifice those with the least power to the cruel trolling of a group of anonymous bullies?" And to that point, I think that what's weird to me about this is that the AP Wire didn't look at a bunch of fringe people who are trying to make this one random 23-year-old girl a target and say, "I don't know, you guys are fighting, you guys are picking on a completely random target. This is not legitimate. This is not, this is bullying, this is trolling, and we're not going to engage." Like, to me, I'm just surprised that the AP Wire didn't take more of a stance like that.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. And I had hoped that this stuff would kind of wear itself out. And, you know, the person I think that's kind of helped this the most in a way, done the most good, I should say, is actually Chrissy Teigen. When I think about Chrissy Teigen recently being called
out. Hot take.
I know.
Folks.
How unlikely.
Let's connect all the stories.
A trend. That Chrissy Teigen got called out for, attacking, sending incredibly demeaning, degrading texts
terrible.
To this young woman who, I don't remember the story exactly. She had
married
an older guy,
but she
got married when she was 16 or something. And Chrissy Teigen had told her, "I hope you eat dirt. You should kill yourself," and all this. She was, the texts resurfaced. And then Chrissy Teigen admitted it all and said, "Yes, I was attention starved. I was insecure. I said all these nasty things." And I think I would hope that if people do behave more like that and kind of fess up and keep moving forward, that all of this stuff will burn itself out eventually.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is with this lady, I would say definitely that Chrissy Teigen is great for a form of an apology, which we'll get to in the Ellie Kemper story. But I think the thing with this particular story is that this girl has nothing to apologize for, really.
Right. It's a different situation. It's the fake right. media bias. It's the idea that we can't tell the truth because that's biased. So, yeah, the truth might be biased in showing one way or one other thing, but we have to be able to say the truth. And if it leans towards a certain bent, then that's not, you know, we have to be able to say Donald Trump lost the election and he lied about it. You know, we have to be able to say that as a fact. And if we're not able to say those things as facts or other things as facts, then what is this like? You can't say some people say that Donald Trump won the election and some people don't. That's not journalism. Journalism is saying Donald Trump lost the election and these people are lying about it. You know, that is an example of how the media tries so hard to be unbiased that they go the other way without saying the truth.
They sometimes are like obfuscating the truth. Let's turn. So we're taping this on Tuesday, which is a little earlier than we normally tape it. Last night I logged onto the old Twitter and I noticed
a little Memorial Day surprise.
I did
just a fun little Memorial Day surprise.
It's so weird. So in Ellie Kemper is trending, and I was like, oh, why is she trending? Like maybe it's her birthday or something silly or whatever, right? But this is what it said on Twitter. This is the Twitter summary. In 1999, actor Ellie Kemper was named the Queen of Love and Beauty at the Veiled Prophet Ball, a debutante ball held in St. Louis, Missouri, which was founded by wealthy white elites in 1878 and emphasized the existing power structure, according to The Atlantic's Scott Beauchamp. So that's the, so she was in a, she was like a pageant queen or whatever, in some pageant that in its origins in the 1800s actually was
debutante
was a bit,
balls are steeped in horribly misogynistic and racist.
I mean, but
culture.
Even but everything was steeped in racism and misogyny. I mean, the post office was built with racism.
These were
and misogyny.
These
you know
were
I mean?
Very the, de- so, all debutante right. balls are yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Problematic.
Yeah, I mean,
to say the least.
Completely. We didn't really have them in California, so they're like kind of a thing I don't understand. But
I'm from Ohio. I am a poor person from Ohio. I was not debuted at a debutante ball.
please get off this podcast immediately.
Mo, did you make your debut?
Well, in fact, my white tails are out at the cleaners right now.
This is such a weird story.
I hate this.
Mo, what'd you think when you saw this?
Listen, every time I think, wow, maybe Twitter isn't so bad. Oh my God, look, all this money was just raised for pediatric cancer. Oh my God, look, these two lonely people feel less alone because of social media. Then something like this happens, and I just
and
think
like,
it's
no,
nasty
wrong.
And yeah. awful. And yeah. I didn't even allow myself, because a lot of people who sound smart were sounding off about it. But yeah. I knew that even if I went down the rabbit hole and read about it, I probably wouldn't learn much. And listen, I have no idea if this is affiliated with religion. Maybe but it's not. You know
that. Yeah, okay. I read the article about it. I think... Are we canceling debutante balls? That is a cause that I can get behind.
That is a terrible...
I don't like a debutante ball. They're misogynistic. You parade your daughter in front of a bunch of other men, like they're livestock, and you look at them and go, yes, you know, like it's...
Yeah, but Cody, you're parading her so that people know that she's marriageable.
It's so... And I understand people hide behind tradition, but if you look in your room and the tradition is all white people and everybody's wealthy, like maybe change your tradition. That being said, you know, this is... We shouldn't be canceling one person for doing something 20 years ago. She's a victim of misogyny. I mean, really, like, she was paraded around by her parents. I just mean, like, let's cancel debutante balls. Let's not cancel individual people that were part of an institution or a tradition, in quotes, that they were raised in.
19.
This didn't happen yesterday. This happened, I mean, she's the same age as me. Also, I just want to say, I know Ellie a little bit, not well, but she is notoriously the nicest person, the most lovely, kind, generous person to everyone. So it's just also a sort of like, oh man, you know,
like to a nice person. I know. And I have to say too, I was in a brief moment of Kimmy Schmidt. And so I worked with her for a day. And again, you're right. Like super, super delightful. Like, you know, I had nothing but nice things to say about her. Oh my God, she was so kind. You know, and I think it's a lot of like we need to like look at these ridiculous, horrible institutions that have survived. But also just I think one of the things we should probably also point out is following a series of protests about exclusivity, that organization actually diversified, allowing African Americans to join in 1979.
Did any of them want to join?
I'm sure.
Probably not.
So many. changes were made to the name. In 92, they changed it to the Fair St. Louis. You know, it just sounds like, and it says now that the fair looks like any other celebration.
Yeah,
of
like
all
it's
Americana,
based on sort of
fireworks,
a Mardi Gras
food and music
type thing.
Right.
It's a weird, thing.
So it's my question, I guess, who are the people that dig up the things that were
people
you, where you, yeah.
People who's on who Memorial have Day at
their
barbecue.
People who have too much time on their hands. People who are unhappy. No, it's terrible. If you really care this much about something, then actually do the work. Don't be lazy. Look into it and write a real article about the tradition of debutantes and where it comes from and why it's bad or why it's not, or maybe why surprisingly some people, working class people, actually don't resent it or do resent it. But you know, anytime somebody tweets about stuff like this, you know, more often than not, I'll look at their little bio and it will say like, you know, father of three children or, you know, mother of two. And I think, are you really doing this? Like, I'm so glad I wasn't raised by you, that you're on this social media trashing this woman.
Spend more time with your kids.
Yeah, it's like, shouldn't you do? I mean, it's really ridiculous.
And just, I will say as somebody, because I'm the same age as Ellie, like, you know, things were different when we were younger. I grew up in Ohio. The internet like had just started, you know, like you're the only people telling you what's what or what's okay or what's not are your family and the people that you're around. We didn't have, you know, Twitter to post something and be like, oh, that was not maybe, you know, I didn't know that many black people. I didn't know people of color. I didn't know Jewish people. You know, I just think like you're just raised a certain way and everybody looks like you and it seems to be a little bit different now. You can kind of be a little, you can awaken to certain things being incorrect, but things were more insular back then. And I are we really going to blame somebody for not doing the research on the history of the debutante ball
at
that her
19.
Parents made her do?
I just want to point out the three of us are not black. And so I would love to hear from black listeners. What do you think? I mean, you know, you obviously hear us. We think it's like pretty harsh to put someone against this. Again, this story came up before the panel was after the panel was confirmed. And so I'm curious to know what people think about this. Like, should she be held to the standard of, you know, of the choices that she made, you know, with her parents, you know,
as a youngin'? She should be put in a time machine and we should go back there and judge her in front of a tribunal.
Well, that seems like a really fair thing to do.
That sounds like
a
great idea.
She hasn't come out with, to my knowledge, hasn't come out with a statement for it yet.
No.
So maybe she'll, you know, I should be, you should be allowed
to
disavow things that you did 20 years ago. Maybe she won't. Maybe, I don't know.
Let's
I would
see,
disavow
let's see what
if I
she
were
says.
Her, but hey, guys.
I think she probably, and she seems like the right kind of, well, we don't know. We don't know. Okay. Folks, let me know what you think. I'm so curious. This is such a crazy story. Now, let us move on to topic number three. So the term burnout dates back to 1973, which was news to me, but also somehow unsurprising because it's not like you can picture Eleanor Roosevelt being like, man, I'm burned out. You know what I mean? So it's a modern thing, and Jill Lepore wrote a piece about it in The New Yorker that we're going to talk about. But first, my question for you guys is, like, how Do you define burnout, and what is your experience of it if you have experienced it?
We both
don't
just
jump in at once.
Very quiet. We're burnt out. This has been a really long podcast.
This is
a,
yeah, it's
so
too long.
Burnt out from this.
Currently burnt
from
out from
this
it.
Chat.
This year has been a whole lot of burnout.
Well, what does it mean to you?
Like, I don't know.
How do you?
I think Americans have this thing where we have to be the most tired and the most like overworked. Like, you know, oh, I'm a martyr because I slept 2 hours last night and I'm getting, you know, 6 degrees at once and I'm raising 12 children and I have no help. And, you know, it's like, I think we really like thrive on that. I work 80 hours a week. You know, it's we feel like we're doing something. Whereas the rest of the world, I feel like in Europe, they're like, why do you do that? Just can
yeah, like what is the point?
Yeah, I mean, obviously people have to work a lot to make money, but you know, we just pride ourselves on our sacrifice. And I think of myself as a European. I really don't like working that much. I like to keep it like super. That's why I'm an actor. You know, I just want to work like the bare minimum to afford the things I like. You know, I want to be on vacation 6 months out of the year, work 6 months out of the year. That's, you know, my goal.
The dream.
Yes.
I think it was so great that you got Luxembourgian citizenship. So they, your 3 months a year vacation being subsidized
I didn't say
by their
that
government.
I was able to do that. I just said that that's like my dream.
That's
goal.
The dream.
It's my goal.
Yeah. Mo.
I define burnout, I think, well, when I'm not having fun with what I'm doing, and not that you know, should be a given that work should always be fun, but when, honestly, there are times when I've worked so hard that I can't see straight. And so that I think is burnout, where it just becomes a little bit overwhelming, where you feel like the water line is right up to your mouth. And, but you know, it happens. I mean, and you know, better to be too busy than to never be busy at all.
You know, it's funny because the term itself has had such an interesting evolution. Like you'll see in that article, it started out sort of with people who are kind of in a lot of like caretaking fields or like in mental health. There was a person who was running, who opened a free clinic. So he did therapy and then mental health stuff by day at like a job where he was paid. And then at like 6 p.m., he would go to the free clinic and work all night. So he was basically working like 9 a.m. to like, you know, 11 p.m. every day. And then he started using the term burnout to describe how he was feeling, which is a term that was used more popularly among like drug users, right? Like, oh, those burnouts or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And so burnout, he sort of like took on in this other sense of like, I'm really fucking tired because, oh yeah, I'm working a full-time job and then I'm working another full-time job where I'm not getting paid, but it's a really good mission. And so, you know, it's funny how that's changed. But so, and it's also interesting to me because at that time, it's sort of like, yeah, you have every reason to be burned out. But then it kind of turned into this more the thing that you're talking about, Cody, where it's like people with white collar jobs who are just like making more money than God and they're burned out because it's just so hard to make so much money all the time.
Yeah.
And it sort of took on this more gross vibe, I think, which isn't to say I've used the term burnout for myself. I'm sure a lot of people have used it and they're like, no, I'm like not gross, but but it has taken on this kind of like how much do you associate that term or whatever with like, you know, the kind of, exactly. Like the rich people.
By the way, you made me feel like a total asshole because after I talked about how I work so hard I can't see straight working in media, you talk about a guy working at a free clinic. So take back
you
everything.
You sound better
I said.
Than me. I was like, I just want to be on vacation.
but I'm curious about the two of you since you have kids. Mm-hmm. I remember I read something years ago about how parents were horrified when their own children, when asked what they hear their parents say a lot of the time, that the children would parrot their parents saying, I'm busy, you know, like always talking about how busy right. they are. And anyway, I'm wondering if your children ever say something to you about your level of activity that makes you think I'm either doing too much or what.
I mean, go ahead. My kid isn't like sophisticated enough to have that level of analysis quite yet. But I will say that what's interesting is for every parent to complain. And it's not like I became a parent and I started complaining. I was complaining somehow about not having any time before I was a parent. And then I just seemed to have compounded the issue. Like, it's like I didn't realize that I had it so great, you know, as a non-parent. But anyways, I've just been like a dick complaining about time and feeling exhausted or whatever. And then I think, you know, and one of the things that Jo Laporte says in the article, she says, if everyone is burned out and always has been, burnout is just the hell of life, right? Oh, like, gosh. And I think that's what it is like, oh, is it just that, like, this is what it is? But then, Cody, you're right. It doesn't have, we could be Luxembourg.
We could, you know, give people, you know, a little bit more assistance, give people childcare. Like, there's a lot of things we could do. And obviously, you know, that's not the reason why everybody's burnt out. But I think the reason that America is burnt out is because they have to work too hard. You know, they have to work two jobs and then also take care of their kids. There's no family nearby to help. You know, it's not like the whole nuclear family of the 50s or whatever, where the man goes to work and he only works 40 hours a week and then also gets vacation with his family and he makes enough that he's able to do it, you know, whatever.
Right.
Like, and then the mom was there, but she had the grandmother that lived next door and the aunt. So she needed, you right. know, there was help. We don't have any of that. So we just have people working multiple jobs in order to afford healthcare, in order to afford food, and education is more expensive. Everything is more expensive.
Well, a couple of things that the article pointed out that I thought was interesting is if you ask, like, okay, if this is actually something that's happening more recently, it was coined in the 70s, and then here we mm-hmm. are, what started it? Like, why is it happening? And so you know, Cody, you bring up the decline of, like, the traditional roles of the nuclear family.
I'm not saying
or whatever.
I want to go back to the 50s, by the way.
No, by the way.
There are many bad things.
I just want you guys both to know that anything you say on this podcast, your careers are already over just for being on this podcast.
Well, no, but I do actually want to say that I want to take Cody back to the 1950s so she can finally have that debutante
ball. So fingers crossed.
But another thing that's happened in that time is the decline of church membership, right? Mm-hmm. In 1985, 71% of Americans belonged to a house of worship. But that percentage has declined. And by the way, in 1981, it was like the same number as it was in the 1940s. Mm. So things remained remarkably consistent for decades on that front, because you sort of, like, put your problems into the church and the church supported you, right? Like, that's the idea. In 2020, only 47% of Americans belong to an institution of faith. The other thing that's happened in that time, manufacturing jobs have disappeared. They're now service jobs.
They're not
right?
coming back, those manufacturing jobs.
And the other thing that seemed to have disappeared along with the manufacturing jobs, and this is annoying, is collective action in the service of more fair work. Mm. So, like, we're trying to unionize, you know, a factory. We're trying to unionize warehouse workers and stuff like that, and having such a hard time. But back in the day, collective action was really, like, constant and normal, and it's like how workers got better stuff. So we have, you know, there's a decline in that as well. So, I mean, any other theories on why we're more burned out than before?
Well, you know, so my boyfriend was working as a waiter for a while at, and I think I can say this, I don't think I would be speaking out of school here. He was waiting tables at Gramercy Tavern at one
Familiar.
Point, one of the best restaurants
Lovely.
In the country. If you ever went to that restaurant, and I bet if you were to poll people who go to that restaurant and you ask them, how do the waiters who work there live? They'd say, well, this is top of the line. So they probably live in nice apartments. They probably live close to work. Yeah. They would probably think that. I think I would have thought that.
I guess.
And that's not the case at all. Even at the very top of the line restaurant like that, most of the staff were working other jobs as well. And they were really, really struggling. They weren't living in that neighborhood, which is a nice neighborhood. I just think there's just a huge disconnect in terms of most people who are not working class or aren't in service jobs don't understand how hard it is to get by. And so anyway, I understand why service workers, many of whom are working multiple jobs, are burnt out.
I waited tables for 10 years and I'm still burnt out. That's why I want to be on a vacation. I haven't waited tables in 10 years, but I literally my 20s, I was like, I can't do this past 30 or I'll hate humans. And I luckily was able to stop. But I think it's more, all of that is true. And I think that one thing that's uniquely American is we idolize that, you know? We say good for you. Good for you. You're working three jobs, you know, rather than saying that's not okay. We should help you.
Right. The undergirding force of all of it is Americans picking themselves up from their own bootstraps. They don't need anyone's help. Yeah. They'll fucking faint before they ask for help.
That's good that they fainted. They almost died. Good for them. Congratulations.
Good for them. Yeah, that shows how hardcore they are. Yeah. All right, folks, let me know what is your relationship to burnoutism? Have you been burnout? What is your definition of burnout? Do you like the term? Do you think it's ridiculous? Is it just a description of the hell of modern life? That part of the article was depressing. Let me know. All right, that, folks, is the end of the show. Oh my God. I think you guys are really fantastic. And what I would really love is for the people of Fake the Nation to know exactly where they can find you and follow all of the amazing things that you do. Cody, where do they do that?
I mean, you can find me on Twitter. Hopefully I won't have anything too controversial. Cody Lindquist on Twitter. Cody Lindquist on Instagram. Showtime's our cartoon president.
I'm going to be looking at the early days of your Twitter feed. So,
I'm actually probably going to delete it. I think I'm at the point now where I'm just going to delete all Twitter and start over.
You're just going to do a wholesale delete.
So if you go there and there's nothing there, wait for those cool
tweets.
You're
starting over. Mo, where do they find you?
You can find me walking around the West Village. I'm really in love with this frozen yogurt place called Culture. It's on 8th Street.
Oh, I know that place. Is it good? I haven't been.
It's great.
I walked by.
And the flavor, unsweetened raspberry, sounds like a bummer, but it's actually really good. And if you get in a swirl with the original, which is kind of a vanilla, it's just fantastic. So I'm just hanging out there a lot.
This is
now
making my mouth water, and
I
know exactly where it is.
From Hell's
I can
Kitchen
picture
and go
it.
Down.
I'm going to go.
And listeners will be able to find all of us there.
Well,
and you can also find me on my super boring Twitter feed because I gave up a long time ago. Now it's just
delete it with like me. We'll start over together, Mo.
We're jumping out of an airplane together.
And you can subscribe to his podcast, Mobituaries, and all of that stuff. Folks, you know where to find me. And just a reminder, June 8th at Caveat in New York City, you can see me perform. Nagin Farsad presents An Evening of Comedy from Her Mouth Hole. And thanks so much for people who already bought tickets. It's so delightful. And I just want to do a big thank you to the people that make this show happen. That's our producer, Julia Linden, our sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, and all the wonderful people at HeadGum. Our theme music was written by Gabi Alter. And as always, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. That's an actual real thing. So please do it. Email us at fakethenation@headgum.com and join the Patreon for bonus content and so much more. You can do that at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. Thanks so much for everyone at Fake the Nation who has already joined the Patreon. You've been getting the free stuff. I hope you've been enjoying it. Conversations like the one you hear every week are bonuses on Patreon. And that is it for us. We'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.